I'm here with Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of the Duran. Alexander, let's get to the Horowitz report. It landed yesterday. I went through it, and I also went through a lot of commentary, a lot of articles. I saw the various news outlets and how they reported on it. Here's my quick take on it before you jump in and get into the details of it. And I was thinking of titling the, I was thinking of actually making the title of this video something along the lines of the Horowitz report is devastating or is damning, but Horowitz does not go all the way, or something like Horowitz proves that he's a company man and doesn't, you know, recommend any indictments or any actions against top FBI officials. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm part right, but get into it and explain to us how you see the Horowitz report and how you see what he details with regard to all the FISA abuse and stuff like that.
Right. My take is a bit different. Firstly, I agree with your first part. I think it is absolutely damning. I think it's one of the most eviscerating documents I have ever read about a public government institution in my life. The second part, which is that he doesn't go after people, I think is based on a misunderstanding. Horowitz makes extremely clear the very narrow remit that he has. He is not investigating the FBI. He is looking at whether or not they complied with their procedures. That means that he's not able to go behind what people tell him. So as Jim Comey comes along and spins him a story, he's allowed to point out inconsistencies or things that don't really make sense or add up. He's not able to go further and actually say that Jim Comey is lying. And he's not able to go and actually interview other witnesses to find out whether Jim Comey is lying. And he's not able, this is another point about Horowitz, he's not really able to speak to people outside the Justice Department or the FBI. His job is not to recommend indictments. He can only recommend indictments when there are breaches of procedure which are so gross that they actually amount to evidence tampering. And there is a very serious case. People have minimized its seriousness in one instance. Now, once you get that out of the way and you look at the actual narrative, then a number of things begin to become very clear. Firstly, Horowitz has told a story about how Crossfire Hurricane, this investigation of the Trump collusion conspiracy, is supposed to have happened. And it's based upon the story that the FBI receives this information from, we all know that it's actually Alexander Downer and the Australian government about things that Papadopoulos is supposed to have said. And they put this all together with the fact that, you know, they'd got all this information that the DNC was being hacked. So they decided, they all got round together and they agreed that an investigation needs to be launched. And they think about who are they going to look at? And they decide that they're going to look at these people, Manafort, Flynn, Carter Page, and Papadopoulos. These are the four people they're going to go after. And it's given this very bland explanation, which they've all agreed with. All these FBI people agree with. In reality, what we learn is that the FBI had been contacted by Christopher Steele in early July. He was providing them with all this information in his dossier. And we also learned that Christopher Steele met with Bruce Orr in the Justice Department over a brunch with on the 30th of July 2016. This is the day before Crossfire Hurricane is, you know, started. And he was providing them with all this information. Now, we're asked to believe that this information Christopher Steele was providing the FBI with was somehow mislaid or wasn't passed on to the right people. And they only got hold of it in early September when they were trying to get a FISA warrant on Carter Page. And lo and behold, they get all this information from Christopher Steele, and this suddenly makes it possible for them to get this FISA warrant, which they'd been already intending to seek, but which the Justice Department lawyers had told them it isn't, there isn't enough information there. Well, I don't believe any of this. I believe this is what my, this is my belief. I believe that the FBI understood completely, knew all about Christopher Steele and his dossier right from the beginning. They were nervous about using it because they had concerns about Steele and his background, and that comes out very clearly in the Horowitz report. But when they were told later, that later in August, in late August, that this FISA warrant that they were seeking to obtain against Carter Page could not be granted on the evidence that they already had, which was simply this thing from Papadopoulos, this meeting between Papadopoulos and Mifsud. At that point, suddenly, they, you know, the Steele dossier is produced, and then they use it. It seems to me that they found it because they wanted it, not because they didn't know about it. Now, the other thing about the start of Crossfire Hurricane is that we are asked to believe that all the really senior people, Loretta Lynch, Sally Yates, Jim Comey himself, they weren't really involved. They didn't know anything about it. They were, you know, far away. They don't get involved in counterintelligence investigations. That's what all of these FBI officials are telling Horowitz. Really? You really believe this? A counterintelligence investigation is launched in the middle of a US election on one of, on a presidential campaign, a Republican presidential campaign, and people like Sally Yates, Loretta Lynch, Jim Comey, and all the rest really don't, you know, are not really interested. Again, I don't believe that either. But, you know, that's the first part of it. Far and away the most important thing is what actually happens with this FISA warrant. Because if you remember, back in February 2018, we had that battle of the memos between Nunes and Gowdy on the one hand, the Republicans, who were claiming that the FISA warrant on Carter Page was entirely based, almost entirely based, on Steele's dossier. And Schiff was arguing that that wasn't true, that the Steele dossier was only a small part of it. Well, we now know from Horowitz that it was, in fact, the key part of it. Horowitz's words are that it's the central and essential part of it. They had to use the Steele dossier because the DOJ lawyers were telling them that without the Steele dossier, there wasn't enough to justify a FISA warrant. They went ahead, based the application for the FISA warrant on the Steele dossier. They hadn't at that point verified the Steele dossier. They had all these informers going around meeting Carter Page, meeting Papadopoulos. Carter Page was providing them with information that through these informers, you know, information he was being led into conversations, that he was not involved in any kind of plot with the Russians. George Papadopoulos was doing exactly the same. They didn't mention this in the FISA warrant application. They didn't mention in the FISA warrant application that there were doubts about Christopher Steele's lack of political bias. They knew that Christopher Steele was working for the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democrats, and they didn't mention that either. And they didn't mention, and Horowitz is very concerned about this, that Carter Page, who is the single most important person named in this FISA warrant, he's the person who this FISA warrant is directed against, had been validated and used by another US intelligence agency, possibly Navy intelligence, possibly the CIA, as a trusted informer, even though that intelligence agency was telling them this. That was the first FISA warrant. Then we get renewed FISA warrants. They meet Steele in October. They very rapidly discover that Steele is, in fact, an extremely cagey and difficult person. They are able, very quickly, though, to work out that Steele is working from a primary source. There's one individual who is feeding all this information to Steele, all this information that appears in the dossier to Steele, and that this person is the person who's harvesting this information from other sources. They're then able, in January 2017, March 2017, and May 2017, to speak to this primary source, who they are able themselves, by themselves, to work out who it is, which suggests that this person, whoever he is, must have been known to them already. And the results of that conversation are devastating. Alex, do you mind if I read now from parts of the report?
Go ahead, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, so here we go. First things, this is about the incident in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. The primary source told the FBI that while our report 80 stated that Trump's alleged sexual activities at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Moscow had been confirmed by a senior Western staff member at the hotel, the primary subsource explained that she reported to Steele that Trump's alleged unorthodox sexual activity at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel was rumor and speculation, and that he had not been able to confirm the story. Then we also find another central allegation in the Steele dossier, the bribe that was paid to that was supposedly offered to Carter Page, you know, this huge amount of these huge shareholding in Rosneft. The primary subsource told the FBI that one of his subsources furnished information through a text message. The subsource never stated that Session had offered an interest to Page. We reviewed the texts and did not find any discussion of the bribe, whether as an interest in Rosneft itself or as a brokerage. And then we get this extraordinary thing that the primary subsource also explained that he never expected Steele to put the primary subsource's statements in reports or present them as facts. He said the primary subsource explained that his information came from, inverted commas, word of mouth and hearsay, close inverted commas, quote, conversations that she had with friends over beers. The statements, the allegations about Trump's sexual activities were statements heard made in, quote, jests. The primary subsource said that he takes what subsources tell him with a grain of salt. And it goes on and on and on like that. Now, that all that information is provided by May 2017. By May 2017, the Justice Department, the FBI, know that the Steele dossier, upon which the entire FISA warrant is based, is absolute nonsense. They go back and they research Steele. They discover that Steele, they've claimed to the FISA court that Steele's reporting in the past had actually been used in criminal proceedings. This, by the way, is the claim that the claim that Steele had provided information that was used in criminal proceedings against FIFA officials, that's the Football Association officials, in connection with the alleged bribery by Russia to obtain the World Cup. That wasn't true. It wasn't, in fact, used. And it turns out that Steele's own controller in the FBI had told them that Steele's reporting over time had been only minimally corroborated. So all of this information they had obtained by May 2017 is the month when Robert Mueller is appointed special counsel. Robert Mueller continues the investigation for a further 18 months. The FISA warrants continue to be renewed for months after the FBI itself knows that the Steele dossier is a load of nonsense and that its own sources are rejecting it. And of course, the FISA court is never told this. It's never informed about this.
Alexander, very quickly, who is this other source of Steele's? Do we know?
We can make all kinds of guesses.
Who do you think it is?
I'm going to say one thing about this person.
Where do you think he is?
He is not in Russia. That, it seems to me, is clear. I mean, the FBI meets him on three separate occasions, in January, in March, and in May 2017. It is, I think, extremely unlikely that this person could have been in Russia and that they could have met him in this intensive way in Russia. So he must be, I'm sure it's a man, by the way, he must be based outside Russia. There is also another extremely important subsource, the person who was providing information to this primary source. This subsource is referred to as person one. Steele himself says that this subsource is an egoist and an embellisher. Even despite that, they accept that this is, that they still go along with all of that, and they don't inform the FISA court of this. I am sure this person is not based in Russia either, person one, because, and this is one of the most extraordinary things in the Horovitz report, person one from August 2016 is in direct and, in Horovitz's words, sustained contact with whom? With George Papadopoulos. So George Papadopoulos can probably work out who this person is.
Does Horovitz know who these people are?
Right. Now, if he does, he doesn't say. My guess is Why? He does. This is one of the most annoying things. I made certain positive comments about Horovitz. I'm now going to make two negative ones. Firstly, he doesn't provide a timeline, and that makes it very difficult to put all these pieces together in the way that I've just done. You have to actually sit back and think this through. And secondly, he avoids giving names. So, for example, he talks about the foreign government that provided the information about Papadopoulos having the thing that's supposed to have started the whole Crossfire Hurricane investigation. We know that foreign government is Australia. We know the diplomat in question is down there, but he won't tell us that. Horovitz always refers to it as the FFG, the Friendly Foreign Government, and the diplomat. He never gives us the name. And he does this all the time. He consistently avoids giving names of people. The one name he does give, by the way, very briefly, is Joseph Mifsud. And again, there's been a great deal of misunderstanding about this. Horovitz does not say that Mifsud is not a Western agent. What he says is that he is not listed amongst the FBI's list of informants, paid informants. That leaves it entirely possible that Mossad is a CIA agent. It's only the FBI he's looking that Horowitz is looking at. And of course, he could be an intelligence agent for another foreign power like Britain or Italy or any one of those other things. But generally, Horowitz does not provide names. And it's very important to say that he doesn't interview these people. He doesn't interview person one. He doesn't interview the primary source. Barr and Durham both can and will, if they haven't done so already. Now, there's just a few other quick things I want to say, and they're very important. Firstly, I mentioned the fact that Carter Page worked as an informer for another intelligence agency, another US intelligence agency. The FISA court was lied to about this. When I say they were lied to, this is what has resulted in the criminal referral, because the FBI lawyer actually changed a email. He actually changed an email from this intelligence agency to insert the words into the email from this intelligence agency saying that Carter Page was not a source. In fact, Carter Page was a source, and those words were not in the email. So that was straightforward evidence tampering. That was corruption of a very serious nature, and definitely a serious criminal of serious criminal case on the facts. And the other thing is that, as I said, the FBI had a very complicated history with Steele, which we can discuss perhaps at length in another video. But of course, at one point, they find out that he's spreading stories to the media. They go through the motions of sacking him. But of course, Steele continues to remain in contact with Bruce Orr. Bruce Orr is himself, as it turns out, in direct contact with Glenn Simpson. Glenn Simpson is in connect, and all this group, you know, Orr, Simpson, Steele, they're also in contact with, guess whom? Andrew Wiseman. He who is the lead investigator in the Mueller investigation. I mean, strange, we have never been told this before.
Alexander,
so,
very.
I don't agree, as you can see.
Yeah, but
there is a vast amount of it. There is a gold mine of information.
Let's quickly dig into a couple of questions that I have. Is it possible for person one in the primary source to have been located in Ukraine? Now that we have this whole Ukraine gate thing breaking out, is that possible?
It is highly likely. In fact, person one, one of the things that he provides is absolutely false information about the way in which, about Carter Page's role in changing the Republican platform's position on supplying arms to Ukraine. That, of course, is an issue that would have been extremely important to the Ukrainians. So it is entirely possible that both person one and the primary source, are Ukrainians. I don't know that, but it would be consistent with the known facts.
Does Horowitz conclude, does he answer the question that, in fact, all of this was kicked off by Australia and Downer in the UK and then fed back to the US? That is now conclusive, correct?
No, it is not conclusive. I think that's a very important point to make. It is what he says the FBI told him. And because he is not in a position to go behind it, he has to accept it. Barr and Durham do not accept it. They've made that very clear in statements they've published after the Horowitz report was published. As I've said already, it beggars belief that the FBI, when they launched Crossfire Hurricane on the 31st of July, were not aware of Steele's dossier. One of their agents, Steele's controller, had already been provided with all this information by Steele, and he had passed it up to the higher people in the FBI. And of course, Steele met with Russo on the 30th of July.
Okay, so your point, just to be clear, and I'm going to read you the Barr and Durham statements, so you can comment on those and close it out. But just to be clear, Downer and Papadopoulos, that incident was after the Crossfire Hurricane and all this other stuff that you mentioned.
No, it precedes it. It's used as the justification for it. Okay. But, and this is important to say, that the FBI was already aware of Christopher Steele's dossier before they opened Crossfire Hurricane. I do not believe that he played no role in that decision.
I just want to make sure we have the timeline clear here. Let me read you what Barr and Durham said, and we can close it out. So here's a quick excerpt of Barr's statement. Both of these statements were very, very quick. Almost immediately after the Horowitz report landed, they were quickly put to the press. So here's an excerpt from Barr, statement from U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr. The Inspector General's report now makes clear that the FBI launched an intrusive investigation of a U.S. presidential campaign on the thinnest of suspicions that, in my view, were insufficient to justify the steps taken. And Alexander, here is the statement from Durham, and this is the full statement from Durham, who rarely speaks, who rarely gives statements. Here it is. I have the utmost respect for the mission of the Office of Inspector General and the comprehensive work that went into the report prepared by Mr. Horowitz and his staff. However, our investigation is not limited to developing information from within component parts of the Justice Department. Our investigation has included developing information from other persons and entities, both in the U.S. and outside the U.S. Based on the evidence collected to date, and while our investigation is ongoing, last month we advised the Inspector General that we do not agree with some of the report's conclusions and to predication and how the FBI case was opened. Alexander, why did Horowitz not take this a step further and recommend something be done with regards to Comey, McCabe, Wiseman? You mentioned all these people.
Because he makes it absolutely clear that he can't. That's the point. He is the FBI's internal compliance officer. He is not an investigator, and this is not the report of an investigative agency. He cannot go behind what people tell him. He cannot interview witnesses who are not themselves part of the FBI. He was able to interview Christopher Steele, by the way, because Christopher Steele was an FBI informer, even though Christopher Steele pretended and tried to claim that he wasn't. That is, incidentally, another very interesting sub-story within the Horowitz report. Steele doesn't come out of it at all well. I mean, he comes out as very evasive and, frankly, rather manipulative. And Horowitz makes it pretty clear that he does. The fundamental difference is that Durham, as he points out in his statement, is able to talk to people that Horowitz cannot talk to. He can actually charge people. Horowitz cannot do that. And he is also able to re-examine and reinvestigate people and not accept at face value what they say to him. Horowitz cannot do that. What Horowitz has done, and frankly, this is extremely useful, is he's provided us with the raw data on the surface, which shows that the Pfizer abuse in this case was absolutely off the scale. I mean, it was not just off the scale, it was unbelievably off the scale. And I get to just finish with one very, very simple point, which is, of course, they must have all known this. They must have all known they were still getting this Pfizer report based on Steele's dossier after they knew that Steele's dossier was a load of rubbish. They were persisting with the Mueller investigation for years after they knew that the Steele dossier, which is the only evidence, by the way, the only actual evidence, that's also something, by the way, it comes out very clearly from this report. The Steele dossier is the only evidence of collusion. If you discount Papadopoulos, which doesn't really amount to very much, that they persisted with that investigation, despite knowing that the Steele dossier was nonsense. I don't believe that they were clinging on to that Pfizer warrant simply in order to carry out surveillance of Carter Page. They were using that Pfizer warrant as a much broader, as a gateway for a much broader campaign of surveillance of all sorts of people. And by the way, Horowitz confirms that they tried to get a Pfizer warrant on Papadopoulos, but the Justice Department lawyers also said that it can't be done.
Okay, Alexander, we're going to finish it out right here with my last question to you. And I want you to be very clear as to how you're seeing things, because I think your opinion differs radically from just about every other opinion I've read and I have seen on various shows. Yeah. So Durham and Barr say that they don't agree with some of the parts of the Horowitz report. In their statement in general, I'm saying they don't agree with some of the conclusions. Horowitz is setting it up for Barr and Durham to tee it off and
Absolutely. To
come down hard on all of these guys. And Barr and Durham, in my opinion, from reading their statements, are hinting at the fact that they're going to take what Horowitz did. In other words, they're almost signaling to people, we're going to take everything that Horowitz has concluded and we're going to come down hard on all of these abusers. And we're just letting everyone know. Is that correct? Because your opinion is drastically different.
That is exactly correct. That is exactly what is happening. People have been worried about what Barr and Durham were up to. We now know for a fact that this investigation, the Durham investigation, is a serious investigation. It is going to look at these things clearly and strongly. The only concern I have is that the time frame is now very short again. We have elections in November, next November, so we have less than a year to get this thing going before the election begins. But Horowitz has provided a mountain of evidence, and we should not overlook this, and we should not allow a bit of spinning by Comey and all these people to throw us off the scent. It is all there, and actually I think Horowitz has done a thorough job within the very narrow limits that he was allowed to.
Yeah, it seems to me, listening to you, that Horowitz is laying it out for Barr and Durham to just hit a home run with it.
Exactly.
And outside of the spin of Comey and MSNBC and CNN and the way they're spinning this, I say that your opinion differs greatly, Alexander, because when you go on to Fox News, for example, they're saying that the Horowitz report was damning. They do say that. But they also take the line of, you know, Horowitz didn't go far enough.
Yeah.
Kind of backed off. And he shows that, you know, he couldn't come down hard on, maybe you can call them his colleagues or his peers.
Yes.
That was the picture that they were painting. There was a little bit of disappointment in the air. But your opinion is that Horowitz did a thorough job.
Yes.
It was a devastating job. And now Durham and Barr are ready to take the ball and run with it. Is that correct?
Exactly right. It's like the Saturn V rocket that took people to the moon. It's the first stage. Horowitz is the first stage. Durham is actually going to get us to the destination. He's the second stage, which is going to reach the target, hit the target. So we needed the first stage for the second stage to really be able to take off. I'm going to just say one very last thing. I'm pretty sure those comments, those statements by Barr and Durham were coordinated and agreed with Horowitz. This plays all that impression, and it gives Durham and Barr the opportunity to say what their investigation is all about.
Exactly. Alexander, I think you nailed it. I really think you nailed it on this one, but we're going to find out from Durham and Barr.
Indeed.
We're going to have to wait, correct?
Indeed. Correct. Absolutely. Well, lots coming, I think.
Okay. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of The Durand. Thank you very much, guys. Subscribe to the channel. Hit that like. Smash that like. PayPal, Patreon, Subscribestar. Please donate so we can create videos like this. Telegram. We post everything on our Telegram channel. get an audio copy of this video on SoundCloud and iTunes. Alexander DRN 20 discounts on all Duran merchandise. Any final words, Alexander, from an amazing video?
Well, indeed. Can I just say also, I mean, the reason I was able to, we were able to do it was because I was working all night long reading 434 pages of Horowitz. Well written, but, you know, tough. And I could only do it because I drink from my wonderful Duran 15-ounce magic mug, this one with the coat of arms of Moscow on it. And you see there St. George slaying the dragon of lies and untruth. Well, I think Durham is going to be the knight who's going to slay the dragon, which has been Russiagate. So you've got lots of mugs. You've got all our amazing shirts, like the polo shirt I'm wearing now, 100% cotton, immensely stylish. As we've discussed, there's lots of other shirts, the short sleeve T-shirts, there's long sleeve T-shirts, there's V-neck shirts, all 100% cotton, all incredibly comfortable to wear. And of course, you've got hoodies, we've got hats, we've got stickers. This is the season of Christmas, time to buy nice things. So don't hold back, help the Duran, go to our shop, DRN20, as Alex has told you. And he'll just tell you again quickly how to do it.
Yeah, DRN20, put it at the checkout, 20% off all merchandise. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Duran. Thank you very much. Till next time, everybody. Take care.